from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is the Good Atheist.
Welcome to the Good Atheist for this second half of March. And without further ado, let's get the show started. Ghana makes more restrictive laws against LGBT groups. Religion's long march towards repression continues, this time in the African country of Ghana. When an LGBT group tried to open up a center in their capital city of Accra, religious leaders working in tandem with politicians sprung into action. While it is already illegal to have same-sex sexual relations, it seems as though even this restrictive and inhuman law was not enough. Now they want to jail anyone who dares to help these kinds of groups in any way. This gay panic is brought to you by Christianity, which seems to believe that the worst thing on earth isn't the sexual rape and torture of children, but consensuing adults having intimate relations they don't approve of. Forget about the near-constant abuse of underage girls and boys. That's something the public has no interest in uncovering, despite the fact that it's a serious problem. How bad is it? Here's a sample of the kinds of incidents that happen with disturbing frequency. Assistant Commissioner of Police, name anonymized, made it known to the press that Pastor, name anonymized, admitted having sexual intercourse with a girl without her consent during police interrogations. The victims, a member of the church, who was sick, went to the pastor for healing prayers. In the course of the prayers, the pastor touched the mouth of the girl, and all of a sudden, she felt floppy. The victim woke up about 15 minutes later and saw that her pants were loose and her private parts soaked with semen, an indication that the pastor had had sexual intercourse with her. Keep in mind that the study that is being quoted could only rely on reported incidents from newspapers. There's really no telling just how prominent these kinds of crimes are occurring. But if I know my religious organizations, which I certainly do, then I know that the abuse is the norm. In order to get people to either ignore or forget about their perpetual and baffling abuse of their own congregants, religious leaders will often choose a scapegoat to rally their victims towards a common cause. The LGBT community is easy pickings, and so long as their population despises them, they have something that will forever distract their flock from ever uncovering the fact that their shepherds are wolves in disguise. Rome protects clergymen accused of raping Inuit kids. Do you have a dark and insatiable desire to abuse young children, but fear the possibility of retribution? Have you considered the Catholic Church? The Vatican is running out of members, which means that when one of them is credibly accused of rape, they will benefit from the protection of a trillion-dollar organization run by weird and sinister men. When the Catholic Church isn't too busy making sure that people are not wearing protection in countries ravaged by the AIDS virus, they are busy refusing to punish their monsters that have hidden in their evil lair to avoid prosecution. Look no further than the case of Reverend Johannes Rivoir for proof. He's been charged with sex crimes in Canada, but because he's living in France, the quest for justice is essentially stalled. This seems to suit the Catholic Church just fine, and they've decided that the best way to proceed is to ensure the guy is still on the payroll. A French clergyman, dubbed the Devil Priest, who stands accused of sexually abusing Inuit children in Canada's north, will not be dismissed from his congregation after senior church officials in Rome declined to act, citing the nonagenarian's declining health. Any excuse to avoid the embarrassment of having one of their own exposed as a pedophile is a good one, it seems. The reason this individual is called the Devil Priest is because he operated unfettered for over 30 years with the most vulnerable members of society. The police had evidence for years, but even when people approached them with more credible evidence, they did nothing, allowing Rivoire to move back to his home country to avoid prosecution. He's a part of Canada's shameful past, where Inuit kids were forced to attend residential schools, which were more like gulags. Unfortunately, thanks to the church and the government of France, this monster will be allowed to get away with his disgusting crimes. Will the day come when the institutions who protect these people will be held to account? For all our sakes, I sure hope so. Christian nationalists now one-third of American voters. If you want to be terrified, then look no further than this report by the Public Religion Research Institute, also known as PRRI, that demonstrates that roughly one-third of American voters identify or support the agenda of Christian nationalists. The findings of just who these people are should surprise no one. They are populated by a significant portion of old, white, evangelical Christians, although there seems to also be quite a few black and Hispanic groups in the mix as well. In total, when you add up the people who identify as Christian nationalists, or who have sympathy for their cause, it amounts to over 30% of the voting population. The reason that this should terrify people is that this number is an almost perfect parallel to what occurred in Weimar, Germany, before it was taken over by the Nazi Party. The July 1932 elections brought the Nazi Party 37.3% of the popular vote, making it the largest political party in Germany. In the ensuing elections in November 1932, the Nazis lost ground, winning 31.1% of the vote. The Communists, however, gained votes, winning 16.9%. As a result, the small circle around President Hindenburg came to believe, by the end of 1932, that the Nazi Party was Germany's only hope to forestall political chaos ending in a communist takeover. The fragile democracy of Germany was broken by the time the Nazi Party had a significant share of government power. It didn't take a majority for them to simply take over. All they needed to do was ensure that everyone was more scared of their opponents, and when the moment was right, they literally executed their rivals and declared themselves the only power. The destruction of Germany and the deaths of hundreds of millions of people was to follow. Now, the only main difference between 1930s Germany and America in 2024 is that the economy has not yet collapsed or has a crisis. If it did, no doubt the number of people identifying as this frightening new minority would surely grow. That growing instability around the globe and the renewed conflict of old enemies can be a catalyst for these religious psychos to try and grab more power. The only solution to this new disaster is for the nuns, the religiously unaffiliated, to take the mantle of power and to act like a cohesive political group. Instead of just sitting by the sidelines and watching their countries dissolve into a theocracy, the nuns will need to create political alliances with other groups that are fearful of this new development. The alternative is to allow the most powerful military in the world to be controlled by people who pray every night for their God to destroy the world so only their little pathetic religion can dominate. Chicago's Catholic Church is protecting child abusers. These kinds of headlines have long ago lost their shock value, haven't they? Of course, we know that Catholic organizations have been openly impeding investigations into child abuse. We're so numb to the fact that one of the richest organizations in the world is routinely aiding and abetting known rapists that when someone calls them out for it, it no longer fazes us. We must not forget that each victim deserves the same attention, and that we must not allow ourselves to become complacent. In Chicago, a Catholic order known as the Order of Friar Servants of Mary, or Servites as they often call themselves, operate under a powerful cloak of secrecy. They own and operate several educational institutions, one of which is the center of a lawsuit. One of their employees, Reverend Kevin Fitzpatrick, has been accused by 9 people of molestation, and they are suing the order for failing to report him to the police. Fitzpatrick was allowed to operate for over a decade, and so it's not difficult to imagine that this group is only a small sample of the harm him and others of his organization have caused. Here's what part of the lawsuit states. Defendants knew or had reason to know or were otherwise on notice that the perpetrator had engaged in unlawful sexual related conduct with minors in the past, and or was continuing to engage in such conduct with plaintiff, and failed to take reasonable steps and to implement reasonable safeguards to avoid acts of unlawful sexual conduct in the future by perpetrator. The Servite Order is ancient. It traces its roots back to the 13th century, and like all sinister and secretive cults, it isn't in the habit of divulging anything to the outside world. Their edicts are the familiar repressive themes that seem to create, or perhaps attract, perverse humans who like to prey on the innocent. Chastity, obedience, and poverty. The only one this order seems to value is obedience. As the pressure of the lawsuits mount, the order is considering bankruptcy protection. If they do, it would echo the same responses from churches all over the U.S. who have used bankruptcy laws intended for corporations to great benefit. It allows them to avoid any form of legal discovery and forces victims to settle for a pittance of what they wanted. Is it too much to expect some form of retribution? Why should any organization be allowed to exist when it knowingly shields child abusers from the law? Would any non-religious order be allowed to operate if it had records of abuse but had failed to share them? These people should all be in jail, their organizations dissolved, and the money distributed to the victims. It's that easy. Greek Orthodox Church threatened excommunication over gay marriage. You might have heard the news that Greece has joined the growing list of countries that recognize gay marriage. What you probably didn't hear was all of the backlash the politicians who passed this legislation have received. It seems the Orthodox Church is not very happy with their representatives, and they have threatened them with excommunication from their little club. Clerics have called for immoral lawmakers to be ostracized from the church, and ecclesiastical authorities on Corfu have announced that two local MPs would be banned from participating in any religious rites. Aw, isn't that a shame? Getting disinvited from this little gang of thug actually sounds like a badge of honor to me. Keep in mind that we're talking about an organization that has deep ties with organized crime. Just a few years ago, their leader was facing serious charges for aiding and abetting a known criminal. It seems that the church's memory is a little fuzzy. Not long ago, there was a huge scandal involving the archbishop's Christodoulos, who had been caught helping a convicted drug smuggler. He was asked to resign. He refused and died of cancer a few years later. His colleagues were having just a few legal problems of their own as well. The scandal began last month when Bishop Theoklitos of Thessaliotis resigned after being accused of running a trial-fixing rig. Four high court judges and several politicians were allegedly paid large sums of money to clear the bishop and his associates of charges that included drug dealing and homosexuality, which is illegal in the church. This scandal quickly spread to the highest levels of the church. Another bishop resigned after he was accused of having secretly laundered $17 million, believed to have been earned by selling church property and banking the money in U.S. accounts. The third resigned over stories of wild sex escapades involving prostitutes. Newspaper ran photos of a 91-year-old bishop naked in a bed with a young woman. He has refused to resign. A further eight bishops are under investigations for crime including smuggling, bribery, money laundering, drug dealing, pedophilia, prostitution, and sexual harassment. I mean, that's a lot. So these are the guys telling everyone else that they should be punished for allowing same-sex couples to be able to officially be recognized as married. A bunch of pedo thugs and criminals think they are in a position to judge others. All they demonstrate is how out of touch they are with the rest of society. I hope the people they threaten enjoy a long and storied career in politics. There's nothing like being despised by the bad guys to remind you that you're doing the right thing. I wonder if any of these clowns know they are on the wrong side of history. I'm betting no. Christian boarding school accused of kidnapping. It's always in those often ignored corners of America that some of the worst behavior imaginable is tolerated. Civilization is slow to reach some parts, and in these places, religion is still calling the shots. Generally speaking, city folks think that the rest of the world has the same attitude about how to properly raise children. The notion of nurturing creativity, self-expression, and above all, their physical well-being, is a foreign concept to the harsh taskmasters of religion. Spare the rod, spoil the child, has been the attitude of many a Christian. And it's not very surprising when the news identifies yet another story of abuse at their hands. Religious schools benefit from little oversight. In the case of Lighthouse Christian Academy in Missouri, ABM Ministries owner Larry Musgrave Jr., 57, and his wife Carmen Musgrave, 64, were charged over the weekend with a first-degree kidnapping for allegedly locking a student in a small room. The allegations are the latest against people associated with Christian boarding schools in Missouri. The 15-year-old boy was allegedly punched multiple times in the face, breaking his nose, as a supposed preparation for an upcoming boxing match. He was also apparently locked in a small room as punishment. The kid claims that it was because of comments he had made previously about one of the school's administrator's wife. The school used to accept female students until a lawsuit in 2009 that claimed a former principal had sexually abused a female student, and the Musgraves had been aware of the abuse and had done nothing. They settled for almost $1 million. The offender walked away scot-free and simply headed to another religiously run school called Agape Boarding School to cause more pain and hurt. A former student of Agape said he was constantly raped and called Seizure Boy because of epilepsy from which he suffered, while other students have said they suffered permanent injuries after facing disciplinary action or being forced to work long hours of manual labor, it was reported. There was also another nearby religious school called Circle of Hope Girls Ranch that had at least 5 employees charged with abuse, with their doctor, David Smock, being accused of over 100 separate cases of child abuse. It's beginning to be difficult to keeping track of all these abusers. They all have one thing in common, though. Because of Missouri's lax laws when it comes to oversights, religious organizations are free to do pretty much anything that comes to mind, which tends to be some unsavory shit. Abuse victims of nuns seek justice. We pay so much attention to all Catholic priests that abuse young children that we often forget that they aren't the only creepy group of religious weirdos. More and more stories of abuse at the hands of nuns are coming out, encouraged by all the outpouring of support that others have received due to the Me Too movement. For a long time, even the support groups that had sprung up to support victims, SNAP, which stood for Survivor Network of Those Abused by Priests, only mentioned male abusers. Women often being considered caregivers, and of course their stature in society, is a perfect double act for those wishing to escape scrutiny. Stories of abuse by priests are gruesome, but there is something particularly twisted about the way female abusers try to create love narratives that I've never heard of before. This adds a whole new other dimension to abuse. Not only are these victims' sexual lives ruined, but their foundational element of loving a partner is also tainted. "It was abuse. I interpreted it as love," she said of the sexual relationship she had as a student with a Catholic school teacher, who later joined a religious order. As a teenager, she spent much of her free time with her teacher. Their bond was so noticeable that a yearbook entry from a friend called her the woman's companion. "The nun brainwashed me into thinking we were head over heels in love," she said. "God's love. That's why no one else would know about it. It was so special." Now, I'd like to tell you that the perpetrators have all been punished and the victims were financially compensated. Well, I'd like to, but I can't. I'm sure by now you're familiar with how this kind of thing goes down. The statutes of limitations had all expired, thanks to the tireless work of religious organizations that pushed for these laws in the first place. The only good news in all of this is that the public has finally begun to recognize female perpetrators of sexual abuse, and given enough time, awareness could be raised that it won't only be priests that have a sullied name. Let's just take the time to acknowledge that regardless of gender, when anyone works for a religious organization, leaving your kids with them is like asking Hannibal Lecter to babysit your kids. Pakistan sentences blasphemer to death for insulting Muhammad. Do religious people know what persecution is? Apart from doing the persecuting, most faiths are of the opinion that not believing in their bullshit is an insult, punishable, in some instances, with death. They value their little ideas so much that anyone who thinks differently is an apostate, and that the crime of thinking for yourself is the most serious offense. In Pakistan, a young man is facing the death penalty after he was accused of sending texts critical of the Prophet Muhammad. Because his fellow countrymen are all dangerous faith zombies that place their feelings over anything else, his life and that of his family are effectively over. Aslam Gujar, a lawyer who represents student Junaid Munir, told the Associated Press that the judge in the city of Gujranwala in Punjab province announced the death penalty for his client last week. The trial stemmed from charges brought in 2022 that Munir shared blasphemous content via WhatsApp. As you probably guessed, it's impossible to find out exactly what this young man actually wrote, since no news organization has the stones to actually report anything that might offend the most dangerously insecure religion in the world. We just have to take them at their word that a few lines of text between friends merits a young man's life being snuffed out. Must have been one hell of a joke, I tells ya. Munir's father also faces life in jail, presumably for raising a blasphemer. This will no doubt spell disaster for the rest of the family. Boy, you can just feel the love for their fellow man, can't you? This is the same group of folks that claim that their religion is one of peace, and that once the whole world believes in the same crap they do, it will know unimaginable prosperity. This is also the same group of morons who think that a horse can fly. So take their violent and repressive religion at your own risk, people. Americans think religion is losing influence. They say that a cornered animal is at its most dangerous. When desperation sets in and the stakes are raised to the point of a fight for existence, then there is no telling what a creature can do to ensure its own survival. One thing is certain, extreme caution is advised. I say this not to be hyperbolic, although I am already guilty of this, but as a warning for those of us that have become complacent and convinced that religion is on its dying breath. It's true that the steady decline of faith overall has been progressing well among the population. It's been so rapid that a recent Pew poll found that 81% of Americans think that religion is losing influence in public life. It's important to note here that a full 69% of those respondents considered that a bad thing and believed that religion should have more influence. What they don't realize is that influence has actually increased in public life. For instance, thanks to gerrymandering efforts in many states, courts are now packed with religiously minded judges. The same is true of school boards, where dominionists have been busy sneaking religious education back into schools. This is only going to get worse. 72% of religiously unaffiliated adults, those who identify religiously as atheists, agnostics, or nothing in particular, say conservative Christians have gone too far in trying to control religion and the government in public schools. 63% of Christians say the same about secular liberals. The people I want to address in this study are the 47% of non-religious liberal adults who don't think that religious conservatives have gone too far. What the hell are you smoking? Did the recent events in Alabama not convince you that this is only the beginning? I wonder what other kinds of religious encroachments it'll take for nearly half of the non-religious community totally being fine with what Christian nationalists are doing to their country. This is how you lose, by keeping your head in the sand while your opponents, convinced that your side has gone too far, is busy taking away every progressive thing your ancestors fought tooth and nail for. I know it's cliche to say this now, but we are officially the worst generation. A bunch of feckless idiots that gave up on the finish line and let the world slip into a theocratic nightmare. Enjoy your dystopia, morons. Bible Museum closes due to lack of interest. Do you ever get tired of religious conservatives telling you that the Bible is the most popular book in the world? Sure, it's the most sold book in history, but considering how illiterate most Christians are about the good book, it seems as though religious people are not really big fans of the Bible. I speak from experience here on this matter. No one gives a shit about it. Sure, people say they do, but in the same way a person might say that if someone was having car troubles on the road, they would stop to help. The stats on this don't lie. Most of us wouldn't. We just like to think we would. This would explain why in Philadelphia, the American Bible Society's Faith and Liberty Discovery Center is closing after only 3 years of operation. The museum, if we can generously call it that, cost roughly $60 million to build. The ABS was convinced that they would attract a flood of tourists, but predictably, no one showed up. It might have something to do with their pathetic attempt at scholarship or the boring attractions. In any case, this monument to failure is on its way out, and no one in Philly gives a shit. It's beautiful. You can judge for yourself if their sales pitch has any mustard to it. "We've created a massive digital platform disguised as a museum," said Pat Murdoch, the center's former executive director. "It feels like a museum. We've got artifacts and all that, but really it's a digital platform that is ripe for the way that people are learning today. They want to learn from the media. They want to learn from a story. They also want to collect things, and they want to create. That's why we created the Makerspace." Wow. I'm convinced. Anyone with their head on their shoulder could have told them this was a bad idea. Would they have ever listened? When you build your whole life and identity on a lie, it's hard to know what the truth is. These clowns thought huge crowds of people would rush to a museum where they were told they were all sinners, because that's what they were told by people trying to be polite or nice. In reality, they received 2% of their projected visitors. They didn't even come close to meeting any of their projections, no matter how many times they prayed to their sky daddy. If you're worried that the $60 million price tag of this monstrosity was paid for by taxpayers, I can at least confirm that their ode to the worst book in history was actually paid for by the ABS, who had sold their New York building for a cool $300 million and moved to Philly because it was cheaper there. So cheap, in fact, that no one had the money to visit this bloated establishment. If these morons want to keep wasting money building exhibits no one wants to see, I'm all for it. Just don't expect anyone to give a shit. That's all. That's the end of the show, folks. With that, have a good Atheist Day, everybody.